Hi, I'm Doc Searles. Today, Jonathan Bennett and I are going to be talking about NetData, which does real-time health monitoring and performance troubleshooting on Floss Weekly, coming up next. Floss Weekly is brought to you from LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 578, recorded on May 13th, 2020. NetData. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. LastPass manages every entry point to your business so you can mitigate risk whether you are working in the office or remote. No matter where your employees are, LastPass helps you keep peace of mind. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by ExpressVPN. Now that a lot of you are working from home, it's even more important to choose a VPN you can trust to protect you from online threats. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/floss. Hi, everybody. I'm Doc Searles. This is twit.tv. Floss is the new Floss show. I'm your new guy. I'm your new host here. And joining me is Jonathan Bennett, who's a veteran at this, and he is really good at this, and I am completely a rookie. I will be making mistakes, and you will see all of them, and that's part of what this is about. I'm a radio veteran, not a TV veteran, though this isn't even really TV, even though it's not TV. And our guest this morning is Kostas Tsousis. I've been instructed on the pronunciation of his name. He's the CEO of NetData, which does real-time health monitoring and performance troubleshooting and a great deal more. And he'll be educating us about this. And I can guarantee that Jonathan has already studied and prepped for this much better than I have. So hoping they will appear on screen as well so we can chat a bit about this.
Hey, Doc. There's Jonathan. Good to see you today.
Now I'm reassured. So, Jonathan, you already know where you are, but the rest of us may not. So in the physical world, which we still have, where be the...
Yeah, I'm here in I call it the corporate headquarters because I work out of my home, so it's the home office. I'm here in Lawton, Oklahoma, kind of a flyover state for probably most of our audience, but it's where I call home.
I've flown over it often. It's the part of the American outback, I guess. We're I'm in the back front here. But what you see behind me is the non watery part of Santa Barbara in California. So, and Costa, where are you when you're talking here? He hasn't joined us yet. So that's my first mistake. There we go. So we'll be bringing him in. So I guess I could just go into our first read here. Cause this is important. I should tell you, one important thing about me is that I am a great believer in sponsorship in broadcasting and in publishing. And I'm pretty known for the guy who hates being spied on by advertisers. And I love sponsorship because it's an alternative to that. And it speaks of the sponsor's belief in the show and in the publisher. And we have one of those here. And it's incredibly important to me that they're supporting us. And it's LastPass. This episode is brought to you by LastPass. Your remote workforce is a vital part of your business, but it can also be a security risk. LastPass easily transforms or transitions from in-office to in-home with ease. Your IT team, of course, is still the gatekeeper. LastPass enables IT to remain in complete control over which employees are accessing which resources, no matter where they're working, for unified visibility over access and authentication. LastPass ensures your employees have secure access to their work applications with SSO and password management, and it offers an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication so your employees can gain access no matter where they may be. LastPass makes your team more productive and secure and easy for your team to collaborate with coworkers when working remotely. It enables remote employees to securely share passwords across teams in order to stay on top of critical projects. One thing you may not know is that the average business has 185 shared folders. It's critical for business to consider implementing policies and tracking reports on shared password activity to ensure employees are operating securely. Seamless collaboration with coworkers is essential when working remotely. And with the latest uptick in phishing attacks, I've had two in the last 2 days, you need LastPass. LastPass reduces the risk of phishing schemes by never autofilling passwords on suspicious websites. For remote employees accessing your corporate VPN, LastPass adds an additional layer of security directly to your VPN through biometric multi-factor authentication. And we use LastPass here in TWIT, and there we have lots of good stories about how that works out. And I need to mention that TWIT and LastPass are presenting Cybersecurity and Identity Trends Unlocked with Leo, Steve Gibson, Andrew Keen, and Gerald Buschelt. That's Thursday, May 14th. That's tomorrow as we're live at 1 p.m. Pacific time. You can watch this live panel at twit.tv/live and afterward on our TWIT events feed. They'll discuss how the new decade will impact digital identity for businesses and individuals, plus much more. Be sure to watch on May 14th at twit.tv/live. Get simple security across every access point with LastPass. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business and employees stay productive and secure. That's lastpass.com/twit. Okay, so back to the show. Let the show go on. And I need to get to the right page on my big screen. It's not enough. Our guest today, Kostas Tsiousas. I've been instructed on this, the CEO and founder of NetData. And rather than me bungling, though I've already learned a little bit about NetData, how what that is, Kostas, tell us a little bit so you can cue us up and we can start asking you questions.
So, hi from Athens, Greece. So, about NetData. NetData is a project I started developing in 2014 out of frustration. So, I used a lot of monitoring tools and online services and, almost all open source and almost all commercial solutions that existed by that time to monitor a large cloud infrastructure. We had a lot of problems, a lot of frustration. For a year, we were struggling to identify the issues and solve them. So I decided that I had to do something about it. And this is how NetData was born. So I started coding on weekends and nights and the like. And after a couple of years, after successfully troubleshooting the issues we had, I decided to release this project on GitHub. It was open source from day one, but I decided to press the release button. So I did that, and I did a single Reddit post on Reddit, and it went viral. People, downloaded and used it like crazy. It got about 10,000 GitHub stars in just a couple of weeks. And since then, of course, I dedicated my whole life to it. I started developing whatever the community needed. I started supporting other contributors, growing and maturing the code base and, developing a lot more features. So today, NetData is a project that has about 2.5 million users. It grows by about 4,000 new users per day. It is being downloaded about actually more than 700,000 times every day. We are a company since September 18. We have a company to monetize the data. This company today has 40 fully remote engineers working full-time all over the world. We are in 18 time zones, everyone working from home. And we have been funded with almost $21 million. So that's the short story.
That's a success story. And it's interesting. I wonder how many companies these days like start on GitHub or on Reddit. So when you're managing so many remote employees at one time, I mean, are you collaborating on Slack? Are you collaborating on internal tools? Are you doing it all on GitHub? How much of it is live and how much of it is just code comes in and gets patched in and all that? How's it work?
So for sure, remote working is harder. It's a bit harder compared to local working. And the problem is that you need also people that are self-driven, let's say, that have the ambition, you know, they see their work as a challenge because, you know, you cannot control time. You cannot control how people spend their time. So the only thing you can control is the result, if the result is good, if the result is acceptable, if the result is built on time and with the right cost. Of course, we use every tool imaginable. So, yeah, of course, Slack, of course, Zoom, Google, a lot of tools from Google, Hangouts, you know, Meet, G Suite. So, but many, many, of course, a lot of GitHub and many more tools to help us coordinate, share the decisions, you know, have a common understanding, have a common project plan. It works. It's a bit slower compared to local working, but it works. It's a bit harder too because you have a lot of meetings at the end of the day. As a manager, you run a lot, really a lot of meetings, online meetings, I mean. But it's fun at the same time. It's very fun.
Hey, Costa, I want to jump in if I can. It's super interesting to talk about kind of the structure of the business. But before we get into all those questions, I'd like to know what exactly is NetData? I mean, we talked about remote management. What does that mean in this case? So are we just collecting data and displaying it, or are we controlling a bunch of servers? What's kind of the niche that NetData fills?
So the idea with monitoring, especially with metrics, you know, observability today is about metrics, logs, and traces. NetData is only about metrics. We don't do tracing and logs yet. So regarding regarding metrics, what you do is that you collect data, you visualize data, and you run health checks on data. So the big difference with NetData changed a bit the game. So what I made differently at the beginning was that I said, come on, monitoring should most of the time, especially infrastructure monitoring, has to be almost fully automated. So there is no point to configure again and again the same thing. What we use is standardized applications. We use a web server or a database server or the operating system. There is no point to configure everything in monitoring by hand. So what I did is that I built a tool that auto-detects everything. Nothing to configure there. It's everything inside it. So there are no moving. There are not a lot moving parts. It's one thing that you install the agent, then a data agent. But then what I also did is that I wanted a tool that able to surface all the insights. I wanted a tool to actually kill the console, the system console for troubleshooting. So what I did is that I said every metric has to be collected every second, like the console does, the console tools do. And the visualization should be automatic. So every metric should be somehow visualized. And this visualization has to happen in a meaningful way so that people that are having in front of them, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 metrics will not lose their mind, because, you know, if I give you just 2,000 metrics in a bucket, you are lost. You need a book to understand what you are, what you have in front of you. So NetData, what NetData did is around these three pillars: high resolution metrics for every metric as a standard, meaningful presentation so that all the metrics are visualized and correlated, and all this knowledge is inside the tool, and simplicity, so make it work by itself, make it auto-detect the metrics, attach the alarms to them. So the final result is that you install NetData and you are done. Seconds later, you open the dashboard, it's fully, it renders all the metrics, you can, it automatically attaches alarms to them, so you just install NetData, nothing more. And this is why people loved it so much, because it simplified their life significantly.
When we talk about metrics, just to make sure we're on the same page, are we talking about things like processor load, how much RAM is being used, how much free disk space you've got, your temperature that your CPU is running at, so that sort of data?
Yes, but, you know, most of the monitoring solutions that existed and still do, all the other solutions apart from the data, provide just an abstract view. So you install another monitoring solution on a system and you get on an empty, let's say, VM on Amazon or on Google, and you get about 100 metrics. That's it. So on an empty thing, on an empty Linux box, you will get 100 metrics. On the same box, the data will collect about 2,000 metrics. So what's the difference? Eh? So instead of collecting for CPU, only the CPU load, NetData will collect everything related to it. How much the CPU the processes have used? What about the interrupts? What about, you know, the soft and the IRQs? What about every little detail? How many processes? So the same with disks. Instead of going into a disk and saying, okay, how much free space it has, how many I/O bandwidth it uses, how many IOPS it executes, NetData collects a lot more, everything actually that you can get out of the console. Because I remind you, the whole point was to kill the console. Eh?
I'll try not to take too much offense at that. I've used Cacti in the past, which sounds like it's kind of meeting the same need. Is it fair to compare Cacti to NetData?
Yes and no. I think that Cacti was developed mainly for network, and then it was expanded to support a few more metrics. The key difference, if you use NetData, is that let's say that you will feel that there is a big difference on the capacity of the project. So the project is not just about rendering a few charts. It's about providing a dashboard that you can use to troubleshoot. So NetData is interactive. Cacti is not. Cacti is very limited in what it can provide, the functionality it can provide. So NetData is a troubleshooting tool, let's say. It tries to help you figure out what is wrong with the system. So you can highlight areas and you can navigate on all the other charts and you can, you know, compare charts together. So all this functionality together with the alarms, I think is a lot more compared to Cacti.
Mm-hmm. Just because I'm curious, does it use the round robin database underneath the hood?
No, we have developed our own database. So a few years ago when I started, it was a very small database I had developed in the project. Now we have a much better DB engine. Again, it is ours. This allows NetData to be a lot more efficient and fast and with a much smaller footprint in maintaining this large database. Because, you know, Netdata collects every metric every second. So if you have 1,000 metrics every second, is you understand that you have and you need 4 bytes per metric, you understand that after a day, you need a lot of megabytes of RAM. Mm-hmm. It's 200, 300, I think. So the whole point is how to maintain this database without influencing the system. So the data is extremely light on the systems it runs. And at the same time, being extremely fast in servicing the requests about this data. So in the data, for example, for all chart refreshes, the data responds in less than a millisecond, which is a great achievement, I think, for a monitoring tool.
Yeah, that's impressive. Is that database program been spun out into its own open source project, or does it just live inside of NetData for now?
No, it lives inside NetData for now.
Okay. I know that I have found things you wouldn't expect that you can do with RRD, the Round Robin database. And so, for example, I'm doing temperature monitoring in my house with RRD and not using anything else from Cacti. And RRD itself is beginning to show its age. And so if that was a spun-out project, I would be very interested in looking into that to replace some of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of NetData. The design of NetData is ideal even for IoT. You know, we have a home automation company that is installing the data on the sensors. So you have the sensors that have a little bit of CPU and RAM and, you know, some I/O there, and they run the data. So the data has been developed as an embedded project. It has been developed to be embeddable. I think you will be amazed to see how fast the data can be, given the things it does in a Raspberry Pi, for example.
So that is something else I wanted to ask about. Does NetData do an install on every box that it's monitoring, or does it have support for pulling data over simple network management protocol?
So, you are supposed to install the data on every host you own, on every host, on every computer you run. But the data is also able to collect every data, each data is able to collect data even from remote sources like SNMP or like remote databases or even, you know, remote systems. Then what the data can do is that it can stream metrics between the data servers. So you can build hierarchies. You can build a whole network of the data servers where you have aggregation points like a pyramid. And, you know, on all of these points, all the streaming is real time. So even if you stream, I don't know, a few nodes further, all the data, because we also support proxies and the likes. So even if you stream data further away, the data still are going there rapidly in less than a millisecond. And all the functionality can also be run by the data masters. So you can have health checks or you can have, you know, dashboards or whatever else on the data masters. So the whole point is that you distribute the data everywhere, and then of course, you can query all the data at the place they are. You don't need the centralization point. But if you want to have centralization points, you can. And you are supposed to stream metrics with the NetData protocol to this master server or many master servers and query them instead of querying all the nodes. So it's more complicated.
So I'm curious now, as we talk about this kind of hierarchy, when you get it installed like that, I assume it's possible to have a single dashboard that represents your 5 servers that are installed or your 10 servers that are installed, right?
Yes. So this is what we do. So the open source thing, the open source agent, is a single node monitoring. What we provide out of the box is that you install and a data on a box, it collects metrics from that box or from remote endpoints. But then the dashboard is presenting all the data of that single agent. Even if you merge all the data, if you stream all the data to one master server, Still, all the nodes on that server are, let's say, separate. You cannot have them together on the same browser web page. What we do now is that we are developing a data.cloud. This is a free SaaS offering, so we give this to everyone for free. And what this does is that it connects to all your Netdata. You claim your Netdata to make sure that they are yours. And then on that SaaS offering, you have multi-node dashboards. You can configure custom dashboards like in Grafana. You can have cross-node health checks. So the agent, the open source agent you install is single node monitoring, and we want to be the best single node monitoring out there. And then we offer a free service where you connect all your data together to have all this infrastructure monitoring, let's say, view.
And what is the technique that you guys have used to, generally speaking, and then also with having multiple servers together, to make it useful without being an overload? Because you mentioned having 1,000 different metrics collected at once, and I'm just imagining if you're trying to look at all of that at once, it would just be essentially noise and be very difficult to make heads or tails out of the data.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. This is the problem, the key problem that data tries to solve. So if you go to any other solution and you look at 1,000 metrics, you will be lost. You will be lost. Why? Because these metrics lack metadata. They are not organized. They are not correlated. It's just a series of metrics, one below the other. In a data, you have a very well-defined structure where all the metrics appear. So you can go to network interfaces. For every network interface, we may collect 10 or 20 metrics. For every disk, we may have 30 or 40 metrics. For every, let's assume that you run a database, you may have, 100 metrics for your MySQL or 30 metrics for your web server. So we have a hierarchy, we have a menu, let's say, that makes everything reasonable. So you will not be lost. That's the whole point.
And what about alarms? You mentioned this, and I'm curious about it. So one of the things that's super useful when you're collecting data like this is to be able to have something that says, oh, hey, this server CPU has spiked, or this fan on this server suddenly is showing zero RPMs. Something has gone wrong here. We need a human to come look at this. What does that process look like, and what kinds of avenues does NetData have to be able to get a hold of the right person?
So Netdata is the first thing is that Netdata collects all these metrics, and in this pipeline, the data collection pipeline, and while storing them in the database, it checks them. These checks are alive, are fast, real time, per second. So when we detect an issue, we trigger an alarm. This alarm then is configured to send notifications. The default notification is an email and on your dashboard, on your web browser. These are the defaults. But then you can have, we have about 30 or 40, I think. So you can have PagerDuty, Slack, Twilio. You can post it on an IRC channel. You can post it on, So the whole point is that the notification can then be, is personalized, is the user selects how wants to be notified.
And then I'm curious. I was just taking a look. When someone goes to say deploy it on a Linux server, do you guys have packages for say CentOS and Debian and Ubuntu, some of the popular ones?
Yes, we have packages, binary packages you can install for the popular ones, but we also support. We provide a build script that builds it from source directly from GitHub on your machine. And we also have a static build so that you can install it on any Linux box that runs a kernel. A Linux kernel, yeah?
So I've got one a question, and less informed than than Jonathan's, and you may have already answered it in a way, but I'm familiar with how in the healthcare world, the more data points you get on what's going on diagnostically, the more the system can start extracting out diagnoses that a single doctor might not know. And I'm wondering if that, you know, if you're doing something, I'm sure you're doing something like that, but what that process is and how the community shares back, hey, wait a minute, I saw these 15 slightly odd data points out of the zillions that you're collecting, and we put it together to see that this looks like a warning towards something or other, and that's what, there's a diagnosis we could share there.
Yeah. So traditionally what happens is that, you know, as I said at the beginning, most of the monitoring solutions are going abstract. So it's like going on a helicopter to see the traffic on the roads. Eh? You get the helicopter. The problem with this is that you know, the limited metrics they have forces them to go upper and upper and upper in the clouds. So it's fuzzy at the end. You don't have a clear understanding of what's happening. So for any other solution, commercial or not, or open source, you get out of these few metrics that they collect, you get an alarm that something is wrong. And then what? What do you do? You don't have all the information inside this tool to troubleshoot the issue. So it says, yes, you have a spike, or you have dropped packets on a network interface, or you have, retransmits on a network interface. Then what? What do you do? What people do today is that they go to the console. So you have to go and start issuing, you know, exotic commands and know, 20 or 30 different tools in order to figure out what is the problem. And actually, you cannot browse these tools. You have to have prior knowledge in order to suspect and say, okay, I think that this tool may help me. Let's run it. And you have to know the tool. You have to be, you know, understand the information it provides and the likes. What Metadata does in this case is that it gives you all the metrics in a browsable and interactive web page. So what you do in this case is you go visually to see what the problem is, what other metrics may be influencing or have been influenced by the spike you see or the problem you see. Of course, we are trying to enhance the tool in order to have automated things to help you. So when you highlight something, to get automatically a list of the metrics that may be related to that. So you highlight the spike on the CPU or the spike on the network retransmits, and the tool may tell you that, okay, look, we have an attack, or this network interface is saturated, or we have this other problem that the CPU or the IRQs or the temperature or whatever else that may be related correlates to that spike. Is that better?
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's a great answer. This is a good time for our break, and so I can let you know that that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is software that already thousands of our fans use every day to protect their data online. Hacking methods have grown even more sophisticated, and at home you're much more vulnerable. And we're sure in most cases that you don't have your own IT department to protect you from online threats. So it's important that you take action on your own to secure the devices you use for work. That's why we recommend using ExpressVPN for the best online protection possible. Now, we've been talking here on at Twit about ExpressVPN for so long that you already understand why encrypting your network data is so important, but many of you still haven't acted, and why might that be? Well, you might be thinking security threats don't affect you personally, but not using ExpressVPN is kind of like leaving your front door unlocked every time you go out, so nothing might happen for years, but when a break-in does happen, it's really, really bad. So one of the easiest solutions to secure your internet data is with ExpressVPN. You click one button on your computer or smartphone and you're protected. Sir, the question is, why haven't you used your ExpressVPN yet? Well, you can find out how to actually do it by visiting a special link right now. That's expressvpn.com/floss, expressvpn.com/floss, to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free with a one-year package. So protect your internet today with the VPN you need to keep your data safe. That's expressvpn.com/floss. So back to our guest, Costa Tsousis of NetData, which I'm coming to utterly believe in. You're very convincing, I have to say. Why would anybody want anything else? So actually have a question from the back channel. Will NetData correlate events to help find root cause, like expensive solutions like Splunk? That comes from Digimax, by the way, one of our followers.
Yes, we are currently developing this. Actually, yesterday I saw the first beta we used internally, the first proof of concept, let's say. This is on the road. This is coming. Yes.
Fantastic.
It's gonna be free.
Excellent. So it's a good question. It turns out, I have another one, which it has to do with the cloud native landscape. So when I dug around, I found that you're active in the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, and the cloud native landscape, which I learned about through the Linux Foundation and visiting what they do, and that's actually part of, I mean, and you're one of many little chiclets they have, and it's a really clever thing, this cloud native landscape, in one section of it there. So I'm kind of wondering where you stand out there, but also, and you could treat this as a separate question, it may or may not be relevant to your work, I don't know, but that's 5G, because an awful lot of what's happening with 5G is with local clouds. 5G is actually going to shard clouds into a zillion little pieces that have the lowest latency possible. That's part of the point with 5G, and part of what the cloud native landscape is about is how the different different companies within that on an open source level are all collaborating. So I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about where you fit in that and what you see coming.
So NetData is the third most start project in the CNCF landscape. But we are not related. NetData is not related, has not been adopted by CNCF. So we just participate in the landscape for people to find us, for people to see how we compare with other solutions. CNCF does a great job. I think they are trying to standardize a lot of stuff that are. Before that, it was really a mess. So every vendor, every community did their own. So they are trying to standardize stuff, which is perfect. And we love that. And we support CNCF by all means. So I don't know what you would like to know more about CNCF. I think they are doing a great job. We support them. We are one of the best projects on the CNCF landscape. NetData is cloud native by definition.
Well, that's good. Do you have any insights into what's going on with 5G? Just that's and where cloud is going there, because that's part of the. I mean, it's quite aside from the CNCF. I mean, nothing in the words the CNCF stands for says 5G. But when I went to their event, it was like everybody was about 5G and what changes that's going to bring. And I'm wondering if that's relevant for you at all.
I think CNCF is not related to 5G by any means. So I don't know. I'm not able to tell. I don't really know.
Good. It's interesting to me because it's that's what they talk up, and what's actually happening with the developer there may be another thing. We have another another couple of questions coming in. One is future plans about caching log events and the like, and also about what license that you use. And I'm wondering if you could touch on that, so, and then probably hand it back over to Jonathan, who knows more than I do.
So Netdata is about is released under GPL v3, so the latest GNU public license. We, of course, it is free open source software. At the same time, we use we develop a closed source cloud, a closed source SaaS offering. That currently is free, and actually what we release now is and will always be free. We plan to develop enterprise specific features in about a year from today. So the idea is that we want all the world to experience this new way of monitoring systems and applications, infrastructure. And so we have decided to give most of the value for free. What is, was the, there was a second part in the question. What was it?
Oh, the license.
The license.
The, you already answered that. You have a GPL v3.
Yeah. And the other part was?
Let's see. Caching log events and the like, it says here.
Oh, about logs. About logs, Netdata today already collects web server logs, all kinds of web server proxy logs. So HTTP logs. And actually, it turns them into very meaningful metrics. So, and this is real time. The good thing with Netdata is that everything is real time. And it automatically also attaches alarms, etc. So if you run a web server, or a website, or an API, trying the data, you will be impressed on how easy this thing is and how many insights it gives you out of the box. But logs is generally a much, much bigger thing. We are talking about custom application logs or structured logs. So the data is not yet there. We think that we will be able to enter this market, the logs market, much later, not at the current state.
Costa, if I can jump in, there's something that is a really interesting thing you can do with this. I've developed something similar to this in the past, and so that's part of the reason why I kind of know what's going on with what you're doing here. What is super useful is to be able to, and it sounds like you've got some of this working already, to be able to go to your graph, and then you see a huge spike in your graph. And what I got working that I just loved was to be able to highlight that spike and then get a log report for these are the log messages that happened in the time that you just highlighted. And boy, something like that is just super useful for being able to look at, I've got weird data here. Where is that coming from? Let me pull the log messages that I think are going to be related to that. And I would love to see something like that on your roadmap.
Yes. Yes, and I agree that we have discussed this already internally, and what you described is actually Logs MVP 1. It's the minimum viable product 1. Mm-hmm. The first thing to be developed.
Yes. Have you guys, so this project that I was working on, somebody challenged me on this right before the funding dried up for it, of course. Have you guys considered doing something like machine learning to push all this data into? And then you've got, TensorFlow or something looking at it would then say, none of our exact alarms have been hit, but because of everything that I'm seeing and correlating together, something looks weird. A human should take a look at that. Have you guys thought about that?
Yes. So the first thing is that Netdata, all the alarms of Netdata are smart enough. So in a few cases, actually, Netdata can predict that something will happen, even without artificial intelligence, without machine learning. Uh-huh. This is just statistical algorithms. You know, we use rolling windows and the standard things, the industry standard things for having generic alarms without, you know, hard coding specific threshold. So it will not hit if your request go above, I don't know, 1,000 or 500 or something. It has rolling windows to understand if you have a sudden spike or something goes deep. But still, we are improving this with a lot of more algorithms. So the whole point, you know, is for the system to figure out if the situation at hand has never happened before. Mm-hmm. So you see the data runs on the system all the time. Right? So after some time, it should know how the system behaves, right? What happens on the system. So there should be an algorithm there to figure out if the situation that is happening now is abnormal, is not like before, never before. So we are experimenting with this. We have a team with machine learning engineers that is working on experimenting, actually, on how this can be done. You know, the difficulty with this is this. Even if you have two servers, two identical machines, the same software, the same application, the same database, everything is the same, but you change the use. So one is the database that you use for servicing users, customers, but the other, the cluster, the replica of this database, is used for backups. The use case is completely different. The machine learning of the first machine, the trained data of the first machine, cannot be used effectively on the second, although the machines are identical. So we have, in order to solve this problem, we have to have something running permanently and learning permanently on every server, on every node you have. It's not easy. It's not easy. But we are experimenting with it.
Interesting times we live in when something like that is even possible. Yeah. I'm curious to dig into the difference between your what you offer on the business side for a fee, your software as a service, versus the open source side. First off, how much of a difference is there between those two offerings? And then do you guys have a game plan for getting your proprietary features eventually pushed over into the open source code?
Okay, there are many models for monetizing open source software. So what we are committed is this. The first thing is the open source agent is the only agent that will ever exist. It will have all the features, it will be open source, and it will be free. The next thing is that we are developing a SaaS offering. This is not open source, but this offering is still massively free. So all the monitoring functionality that you get, you know, that you will get out of NetData and NetData Cloud, the SaaS offering, is free. To understand how this will work and how at the end we will have a profitable business, I would like you to think GitHub. Okay, GitHub is about Git. Okay. The Git thing, so repos and committing code and all this kind of stuff together with the issues and the light project management they have and the likes, everything is free. They never sell any of the core value they provide. Mm-hmm. What they sell is a control to the repo. So if your repo is free, is public, it is free. But if you want a repo for your team only, for your privacy, that you want privacy in it, then you have to pay. You have to go to get a subscription. The same thing can happen with monitoring. So, for example, service status pages. If you want to have public service status pages, they are free. The same thing can happen, with a plethora of features related to monitoring. Let's get then Slack. What Slack does is that everything is free up to 10,000 messages. So you can use Slack for free. You don't have to pay. But with a history of up to 10,000 messages. The same can happen with monitoring. So all the monitoring can be free up to a week of history or a few days or a month or whatever of history. If you want to go further in the past, then you need to buy a subscription. So what we're trying to do here is change even the pricing model, even, you know, the business model that these services are offered. So we are trying to give all the monitoring value for free for everyone. Actually, I want all the universities, I want all the home labs, I want all the small companies to use NetData for free. And actually to sustain this, what we do is that we use the open source agents as a distributed database. So instead of collecting all the data, the user data in our premises, in our cloud environment, we say, no, all the data are yours, are inside your servers. We don't need your data. So what we do is that we query all your NetData in real time. So we give you the impression that everything is on a single site, but actually it is not. Data are coming from all over the world, all over your network.
Yeah, that's cool. We do have a couple more questions from the chat room that I do want to quickly get to. Jojo Dancer says, what platforms can this monitor? Obviously, we've talked about Linux, but do you have support for macOS, Windows, the BSDs, things like that?
So it can monitor Linux, BSD, FreeBSD, and macOS. We have a trick to monitor Windows. So we scrape the Prometheus exporter for Windows. Mm-hmm. But we are going to port it later this year to Windows 2. So your NetData will be installed on Windows natively.
And then Retcon 5 asks, is it written in C? And so I'm curious, what are some of the underlying technologies that make this work?
Yeah, so the core of NetData is written in C. Most of the external plugins are written in Go because, you know, it's hard to, you know, to connect to all the applications using C code. It's not that efficient. So we use C, Go, Python, Node. Everything. Eh? You can write custom plugins in almost any language you like. But the core is in C, yes, for performance.
All right. Very cool. And then something else I'm curious about. I get some fun answers from this question, and that is, what is the strangest thing that you've seen someone do with your project? What's the weirdest thing someone has monitored or even more out-of-the-box ideas than that?
So there was a guy that was trying to monitor a factory, the motors and the, you know, the sensors on a factory with NetData. And actually the guy wanted to go even with sub-second data collection. Then, as I said at the beginning, there is a company that installs NetData on every sensor they provide. It's a home automation solution, and they provide they install NetData on every next to every sensor. We have also a few IoT companies that distribute NetData agents all over, you know, all over the place with unreliable networks and the likes. So yeah. Everything, I have seen quite a few strange solutions, let's say.
I have a couple of brief questions before we wrap. The first is there a question you would like us to have asked that we haven't asked yet?
Me?
Yeah.
No. It's okay. I am perfectly fine.
I thought maybe I was putting you to sleep there. And one is, what's your favorite text editor and scripting language? It's a sort of a standard question we have for people. That could be personally or it could be in otherwise.
So for ad hoc stuff, I use Sublime on every operating system, actually. And for IDE, I use Visual Studio Code.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much. you have me believing completely in what you're doing, and
thank
I
you.
Think it's probably. I suspect that it's fun to work for you. I mean, you're having a good time, and I think that's just great. So I have to go back to my thing here. I guess this is a wrap. Thanks everybody. We have our joke question, which is, do you do anything with blockchain? which it almost has to be.
Me? Again? Blockchain? No.
I guess that's the answer. So thanks so much. We've been talking to Kostas Sousas, the CEO and founder of NetData, which is doing an absolutely fabulous job, I can tell. And looking forward into digging more deeply, if it's possible, into what you've already told us. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
You too. Or night, where you are. So we're we're in the. So Jonathan, so we're you handled most of that. I'm impressed by how much you know about it. What's your takeaways at this point?
It's really interesting because one, I do some network operations and stuff like that. So I've worked with I mentioned the other solution, an old solution, Cacti. I'm fairly familiar with that and pulling data. And then back a couple of years ago, I actually landed a 6-month contract to start the process of developing something that interestingly turned out a lot like what NetData is, which was a lot of fun to develop.
So you could have started a company with that knowledge.
Yeah, so we got a CIBR grant from the U.S. government to do security research for their old, outdated machines that they had that they still have to run and maintain. And so we started looking at this process of, well, what can we do to try to pull data off of these machines and protect them? And the solutions that we came up with were things like, well, let's pull a whole bunch of metric data, like he was talking about, and let's pull log information, and then let's watch those for strange spikes in the data. And then if something like that happens, let's alert the user and give them a snapshot of what's going on that system at that particular moment. And it's really interesting because it sounds like NetData has come to some of the same conclusions that we did about how this needs to be presented. So it's been fun to chat with him and see where they've gone the same direction that we went and slightly different directions than we went.
So since it's free, are you tempted to start using it yourself in some way? Is that relevant?
I am extremely tempted. In fact, I got distracted during the show by doing a little bit of Googling about what does it take to install this? And the first guide I got was, you know, download it and compile it from source. And so I kind of said, well, let's not do that right now during the show. But if I had found a prepackaged binary that I could just install on my server, I would have had it working by the end of the show. Yeah, it's super interesting.
Wow. and I'm sitting here with, you know, a laptop and a phone. So it's not like I'm at the same level of expertise. I was impressed that, I actually just love the spirit of the guy. I mean, he's clearly having a great time, and that's a sign. I thought, God, I want to hire a guy like that to run my company. You know, he's got a sense of humor, as much as that his English is perfect. He seems like a fun to work for, and you know, a worldwide company like that has got to be an interesting thing to run. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of those at this point, but that's. To me, that's been the future for a long time, but watching it happen live is kind of a neat thing.
Yeah, well, that's one of the interesting things about the internet and where we're at now with it is, you know, before people were so separated, and now it's just one. I hate to say this because it's going to sound really weird, but the world has kind of become one big community in a way, because you can collaborate with somebody. You know, between the internet and Git. And the Linux kernel, I mean, the idea of, and I guess open source software licenses themselves, kind of just this idea of people writing computer code and working on these projects has become liberated. You know, anybody anywhere can just jump in and start writing, and you see companies like this as a result.
Yeah, it's funny that back when I saw the internet coming, though I couldn't get on it. You had to be in a university or a big company back in the 80s and early 90s. But I saw it coming, and when it started to explode in 1995, which is when it became commercialized and we had ISPs and dial-up and all that, I started calling it the Giant Zero, and I started writing about that. In fact, I have a book that I'm kind of partly written about it, that what it did was it reduced to zero the distance between everybody on Earth. I mean, in real time. I mean, in close enough to real time. I mean, latencies respected it. It eliminated borders, and I became known as a cyber utopian for that, which I have remained ever since. And Joyce, my wife, added another part to that metaphor, which is that it also got rid of gravity. Like, we're living in this, we're digital. We're not just physical. We're digital now. We're interacting digitally, and we're still embodied animals, but we're living in this other place that's not even a place. It doesn't even have gravity. There is all prepositions don't apply. You're not really on it. Or in it. What is it? There's no it. It's just that there's this absence of distance between people. But she also says it's kind of like living without gravity. And it would take us a while, this is part of her case, that to learn, like astronauts do, how to get along without gravity. And I think now that we've all been forced to stay home and do what this company's doing naturally, obviously you have to if you're in 18 time zones, you know, and acting in real time, you're kind of in that space. But I think we're all kind of learning another way of being together, that's kind of like, there's a lot of stuff that was way out there in the future. We kind of knew it was there. We're going to have to make these changes that all of a sudden we're having to make. And that's why I'm optimistic about a company like his that's already well adapted into that world. And coming from a country like he does, which is like, we're not going to run the world, okay? We're Greece. You know, it's like, we're a small country. We started everything, you know, as you know from having watched, you know, My Big Fat Greek Wedding and other wonderful movies, you know, that the Greeks invented everything, which means it's probably true. But there's this, it's suddenly like the future went from eventually to now. We're like in a now that's very different.
Yeah, it's also neat to see that they have such a good handle on the open source mindset too, because you know, it sounds like essentially everything they're doing, they're just pushing out there, and you know, at least all of the actual feature set for what people would use on their machines, and you know, and going with GPLv3, I think is great too. But when you think about the internet and how that has brought everybody together, it's important that we don't forget that. This idea of open source software, that has actually been a big part of the driver of what's made all of that work.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you know, I've been at this long enough. I'm sure most of the viewers and listeners know this, that I was with Linux Journal really from its founding in 1994 when Linux was at V1. Until last summer when the magazine folded, but and I was editor in chief at the end of that. But the early on, I mean, it was like we were on a mission, and Linux was, you know, very much a minority nowhere operating system. But some of us, including the guy who started Linux Journal, his name is Phil Hughes, saw it coming. He said, no, it's going to take over. It's going to win. It's going to, you know, there's no other way. Linux is the right one. It's going to take over. And then with open source, we, you know, there was a decision made by a bunch of geeks to promulgate open source rather than free software because it was it was a better way to pitch free software. It started out and with a bunch of licenses. It actually only started with a few at that time. But there's this, it reminds, where we are now reminds me of I had a business partner in a company I was with many years ago who was really tough to argue against. He should have been a lawyer. He wasn't. He was a natural businessman. But when you won an argument with him, all of a sudden you didn't have the satisfaction of it. It's like you're playing one-on-one with a guy, and all of a sudden he's on your team. He's switched his jersey and he's now on your side, and you don't have the satisfaction of having humbled and humiliated him. And for many years that was Microsoft, you know. And now Microsoft is like the largest contributor to the Linux Foundation, and you know, and I know lots of people there that are like, you know, open source dweebs that completely, you know, are in on this thing. And And it's not that satisfaction of having defeated them because their corpse isn't laying over there steaming, you know, because you brought lightning down on them. It's kind of like, yeah, you're right. Okay, correct. Now we're together on this thing. So that sense of struggle isn't there. It's kind of weird, you know. So the narrative changed, and it's a different narrative. But I'm not sure what the narrative is now. So that's part of what I'd like to discover with this show. What is the new narrative here?
Yeah, it's interesting how many people come and, you know, we ask those last two questions. And when we ask about their favorite text editor, it's more and more often people are saying, oh, Visual Studio Code. And the first time I heard that, you know, kind of the hair on the back of my neck stood up. It's like, ah, that's a Microsoft product. But now you get to looking into that. And they've made that thing fully open source. And it's a good program and a really neat project. So, yeah, the world has definitely changed in the last 10 years, let's say.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jonathan. And thank you, Back Channel, and everybody else, and for making this less, more interesting and less painful than I expected it to be. So, thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Hey, Doc. It was great to be here with you, and I'm glad I got to be here for your inaugural show. And I thought it went really well, all things considered. Looking forward to hopefully a good handful of years with you at the helm.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the TWiT Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and are breaking the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.